Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Friday, October 9th. I'm Ray Graff. Today is the Week in Review, where we review the week's most dynamic events and take your calls, opinions, and questions. And joining us with her top five news stories of the week is the New York Press Association's Judy Patrick. If you have an opinion or a question you'd like to share about this week's political, economic, or global events, give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number, 800-348-2551. Judy Patrick, The Week in Review. And your calls coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us for a Friday Week in Review episode is Judy Patrick. Judy is Vice President for Editorial Development for the New York Press Association, where she works to support the work of journalists at the hundreds of daily and weekly newspapers across New York State. For more than 40 years, Judy worked as a journalist at daily newspapers, leaving the Daily Gazette in Schenectady as editor-in-chief in 2018. The topic for today, well, we'll hear Judy's top five stories of the week, and we want to hear what your top story of the week is. Give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Again, if you're tuning in for Food Friday, we're putting that program on hiatus until after the election. There's an awful lot going on, and a lot of people want to talk about it, so we will do that on Fridays. And then when everything settles down post-election, we'll go back to having some delicious food, and hopefully by then the pandemic will have allow us to get some people in the studio, and we'll have some food and we'll have some fun. In the meantime, we'll have a lot of fun talking all about what has gone on this week. It's been another whirlwind. Judy Patrick, welcome back.
Well, thank you for having me, Ray. It's always good to talk about the news. But I wanted to say how much I appreciate the work WAMC has been doing on this power outage and the storms. It's local news at a time when people don't have power that they really rely on their radios. And this is really important work you do. It's not in my top five, but it needs to be noted that this is why one of the main reasons you guys are there.
Well, it's my top five for sure, because we haven't had power in 2 days, and I'm getting a little sick and tired of it. Do you have power over where you are?
Oh, yeah, we never lost it. We never got the storm. I'm up in Washington County, and I didn't get the storm. It remained sunny.
I went to Home Depot on Wednesday afternoon, right after leaving the station, and I was in for about 5 minutes. You could see the clouds coming, and by the time I got ready to leave the store, we couldn't leave the store. The wind was pushing carts around, and then the power went out. And, well, it's supposed to be back by tomorrow at 9 in my neighborhood, so... It's a lot of fast food for my family. 800-348-2551. Judy Patrick, last week we did your top five, I think 1 to 5. Let's go backwards today and do 5 to 1.
All right. That sounds like a good idea. So coming in number five, this is a late arrival. The New York Times this afternoon dropped yet another of their tax investigation stories. These are the stories, the series they have done on the tax returns they have found of President Donald Trump. And the story that they dropped today, this is their third, exposes more than $21 million in highly unusual payments from the Las Vegas hotel Donald Trump owns with a man named Phil Ruffin, and these were routed through other Trump companies and paid out in cash. This happened in 2016 when the president was running for president, and he was short on cash, and he was also facing a $25 million fine from New York State for problems he encountered while running Trump University. It's a very long read. I encourage people to brew a cup of tea, open a bag of M&Ms, and spend some time with this story, which I imagine we're going to be talking about in 2 or 3 years. It's a long, convoluted story, but it's a really important one, and it exposes some realities that Donald Trump and his business dealers are going to have to deal with.
Are they alleging in this article campaign finance violations?
Well, they are not directly alleging. There's a lot of this could be, would be, might be in the story. They're not making any direct connections. They're also discussing the fact that the people in Las Vegas long have wanted a high-speed train line from Los Angeles out to Las Vegas to bring the people into Las Vegas. There have been federal approvals that allowed for the issuance of $1 billion in tax-free bonds to fund that rail line. Again, the dots aren't drawn exactly, and so you really have to read between the lines to get a good sense of what's happening. That's one of the problems with these stories that can be challenging, especially for the average reader like me.
Well, let me ask you a question. As a newspaper person from way back, is it okay with you to not have the dot-to-dots connected in any strong way and then do a somewhat incendiary news release or news article?
You know, I consider myself a pretty conservative editor. I always like the dots-to-dots to be right there, or to have someone, a person, say, yeah, this is exactly what happened. I was very cautious in that respect. And, you know, as I've gotten more away from the day-to-day operation, I realize that sometimes you're just not going to get that. Even you see this with prosecutors when they prosecute crimes. Sometimes you're not going to get someone to say exactly what happened, but you have to draw the inference. But again, yeah, I was a conservative editor. I always wanted things very clear.
All right, that's number five. What's number four, Judy Patrick?
Number four is that Michigan kidnapping plot. Wow. What a story!
Yeah, that's crazy.
This is the attempt on Gretchen Whitmer's life. They wanted to storm the state capitol, start a civil war. This really draws needed attention to this trend, this increasing trend towards violent extremism in our society. It's always been there in some respect, but I'm glad that there are entities like the FBI, local police agencies, watching out for what's happening. Whitmer herself has linked this plot to comments from President Trump and his refusal at times to condemn white supremacists and these other violent right-wing groups. The documents, the charging documents that I read didn't spell that out very clearly, so that's an issue left to another day. I think a lot of people are discussing whether or not what role President Trump, if any, had in encouraging this kind of criminal operation.
Well, it was such a story. Six people have been charged in federal court, and the story that broke today out of Michigan was that they were moving the governor and her family around to undisclosed locations while they tracked this group, and this group was actually doing rehearsal runs and was going to attempt allegedly to abduct her prior to the election from her vacation home. So this is a story that we'll find out a lot more soon.
Yeah, they were going to abduct her, kidnap her, bring her to some place, and put her on trial. And this was a serious operation. They talked about blowing up a bridge to her house so that the police response would be slowed down. I mean, oftentimes you get there's a lot of talk and there's not a lot of action, but there's some real planning going on, efforts to buy explosives. This will unfold in the next several months. We'll get a lot more detail about what was happening.
It's the Week in Review today on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551 if you want to join in. Judy Patrick is our guest. All right, Judy, what's number three?
Number three is COVID. COVID's always going to be on my top five, I think. 928 people died just yesterday, and there were 56,000 new infections just yesterday. Total today of deaths in the United States at 212,000. So the outbreaks are surging in the Midwest and the Great Plains. We're hearing reports of a staggering outbreak in the Dakotas. Wisconsin is opening a field hospital at a state park in response to a surge in hospitalizations that is overwhelming hospitals there. And closer to home, we've got outbreaks down in New York City, and experts are saying the Northeast looks like it's heading for that dreaded second wave.
And I hate to say it, but many a health expert, including Fauci and Birx and all the rest, said, you know what, the fall and winter could be rough, and it may well be coming to pass. Let's take a quick break. Before we get to your second and first top stories of the week, let's take a quick break and we'll get ready to take some calls as well. 800-348-2551. Judy Patrick is here. It's the Week in Review. We'll be right back. It's Vox Pop, the Week in Review. Judy Patrick joins us today, 800-348-2551, if you would like to do the same. And before we get to the calls, we'll do Judy's final two for the week, number two and number one, and then we'll get to the phones. Marta and Poughkeepsie, hang in there. You will be first momentarily. All right, Judy Patrick, what's number two on your list?
The vice presidential debate on Wednesday night, only for the fact that it was so normal that the most interesting thing about it was the fly that was roaming around on Mike Pence's beautiful head of white hair. but actually, it was a substantial discussion of the issues. However, the news cycle was quickly overtaken by President Trump, who started to talk about whether or not he was going to debate and whether a foul debate rules the Presidential Debate Commission had set up for next week. That doesn't appear to be happening. So even though we had an hour and a half of normalcy on Wednesday night, it didn't last long.
You know, it's funny. We got an email just as you started to say this from Forrest in Great Barrington, who says, I thought it was certainly a more civil than the presidential debate, but I'm afraid it will just cement each party's negative opinion about each other. What do you think?
Yeah, in some respects, but I think it was good. That may be true, but I think that there are millions and millions and millions of people who learned about issues that they didn't really understand before, and they got some sense of what the differences between the two parties are. That being said, there were some untruths that were said, and that throws our ability to understand what's going on totally out the window.
Now, you know, of course, we had no power, so I didn't see this, but I understand that there were a couple of points that were made, and one of which was Kamala Harris, again, just like Joe Biden, would not say, and was cagey to some extent, whether that administration and the presumably Democratic Senate would pack the Supreme Court. And in my opinion, Judy, they will have to answer that question at some point before the election.
You know, and it's a deliberate strategy on their part not to do this. I thought but I did think that her response, being that the Republicans were actually packing the lower levels of the federal court with hundreds of judges, none of whom were people of color, was a good retort. But I agree with you. I think this idea of packing the court, I think the Biden campaign sees this as an explosive, an issue that could lose some voters, and they just don't want to go there.
All right, it's the Week in Review. Judy Patrick from the New York Press Association joins us today. Our number is 800-348-2551. And Judy, what's number one on your list?
The infected president's wild, wild week.
Another
what a week it was.
Every day is something new.
Well, and so to begin with, this is the entire executive branch of our government was put in danger as this infection spread to top administration officials, military leaders, and members of the Senate. You have to understand, we have three branches of our government, and one was in serious danger. I mean, this infection was spreading rampantly. Well, that might be overstating it. But then we had the physical well-being of the president was in serious question. We didn't know really how sick he was, and the fact that his doctors were not giving us really clear answers exacerbated the problem on every road to public confidence. And then we had the antics. Now, I have never liked reality TV shows, and I especially don't like my government to be a reality TV show, but we had the Saturday Joyride, the helicopter return from the hospital, and the ascent up the Truman staircase, the videos that released, the return to the Oval Office when he's clearly still contagious, the plans to do rallies this weekend. It's stunning. It's historic. You have to call it for what it is. This is not normal. It's stunning. And then you had all the things that the president has said while he's called into various friends in talk radio and the Fox News channel. He's called for Barr to indict Joe Biden, his political opponent. He's also called for Barr to indict former President Obama. He called off the COVID relief talks, and then he called them back on. He seesawed on the debate. He lashed out at cabinet members. He's mad at Chris Ray. He told people the virus was nothing to worry about. At one point, he told everyone it was a gift from God. And then he appeared to blame the Gold Star families who visited the White House on that Sunday, blame them for maybe his infections. He called Kamala Harris a monster. I mean, in some respects, he's always been kind of outrageous in what he says, but this was literally the president on steroids, and it. I hope it ends soon. I mean, I just hope if things get back to a little bit a sense of normal. And it clearly was a wild, wild ride.
All right, let me give you a proposition here. What would you say a bet would be that it returns to normal? Maybe give me 7-1 odds, 10-1 odds. Will it ever return to normal?
I think, life is always changing. Normal is never going to return in any fashion. But I do think if he is on steroids, I think things will calm down when the steroid course, which I'm no doctor, but from what I'm hearing, it's 7 to 10 days. So that at least should stop some of this. Maybe, I mean, that's my optimistic hope. I tend to be a Pollyanna of sorts.
All right. Judy Patrick joins us from the New York Press Association. The Week in Review on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is the number. Marta in Poughkeepsie, very patiently waiting. Go ahead.
Hey, Ray. While I was listening, I thought you could call it Food for Thought Fridays.
Oh, I like it. Yeah, that's a good idea. All right, I'll write that down.
But I wanted to mention that that was an intense list. But what I have to talk about isn't even on that list, that former Senator Joe Bruno passed away this week, apparently, New York State Senator.
Yeah.
And, I heard like he was like some kind of like getting honored. And as far as I remember, both him and Sheldon Silver, they left office in disgrace after decades of manipulating our New York State government, much to our detriment, in my opinion. And he was corrupt. He was greedy. He was a crook. And he subverted the will of the voters. And then even though both guys were charged and tried and convicted, I think only recently did Shelley Silver go to jail, if I'm remembering correctly.
Well, Bruno was acquitted.
Joe ever did.
Yeah, Bruno was actually, that was overturned, and then he was acquitted on the latter charges, I believe. Judy, did you have any occasion to have direct personal contact with Joe Bruno?
Well, I certainly did. I back in the days when I covered the city of Saratoga Springs, Joe Bruno was the senator representing that area. And one of the things a reporter will say, they always like a politician who returns calls. And Joe Bruno always did return his call. I think he's well known in this area because he brought, the pork home. He brought things, a lot of grants and just distributed a lot of state money to this area. He did have those trials where he was charged with, with corruption, but he was acquitted. I always found him a good politician to represent his district and his area. He had an interesting life story, but at the end of the day, and he was a legend in this area. A lot of things are named after him, including the Joe.
You know, one thing about him, and I follow a lot of great reporters on Twitter, and Judy among them, but almost everybody, and I don't even know if anybody had anything bad to say about the guy. On a personal level, even those that had many disagreements or raked him over the coals on issues as reporters, they all had nice things to say about the man.
Right, but you also have to understand that when somebody's dead, you don't want to say anything too bad about the dead.
Well, you've seen it happen.
Well, thanks for letting me say it.
Hey, Marta, thank you very much for the call. 800-348-2551 is our number. It's the Week in Review with the New York Press Association's Judy Patrick. 800-348-2551 if you want to join in. Chris in Housatonic. Chris.
Yeah, Judy, I got a sad note to pass on. I don't know if you knew Tom, the professional over here at Wyandotte Country Club, Tom Sullivan. And he was a great PGA pro for the Northeastern PGA. And sadly to say, he passed away in this storm on Wednesday.
Yep.
And I'm sure a lot of people out there will miss him, including myself and including you, Ray.
It was a terrible story, yeah. And he was out trying to find golfers who were, possibly in harm's way in the storm. And he lost his life. And I'm sure, Judy, you saw that story, right?
Oh, yeah. It was what a sad story. And, it just underscores what the news means to people. And often it's the people in their community and, the people they know. That's why local news is important. We talk about the president a lot and we talk about national politics, but the news close to home really matters to people. And, that was a very tragic story.
Hey, Chris, thanks a lot for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. The severity and the ferocity of that storm, it was shocking to me. I watched it from this Home Depot parking lot from about 15 miles away, and within, it seemed like seconds, just the hardest winds I've seen in quite some time rolling through. So I think we'll learn more about this. Somebody told me this morning that the Weather Service said it was an F0 tornado in spots, but I have not confirmed that information. Got this email here, Judy, from Laura. Let's see if it boots up here. Laura writes, in April, Trump called for his followers to liberate Democratic states, tying this message in with the Second Amendment. Quote, he's encouraging them to attack state authorities in the midst of a health crisis. Joanne Freeman, a Yale history professor who has studied anti-government violence, posted on Twitter, he's slashing at states to gain the loyalty of those who like him, regardless of the impact. And then Laura goes on to say, Trump is at least partially responsible for the militia's plan to abduct Gretchen Whitmer and to harm law enforcement. What do you think? I mean, honestly.
Yeah, well, some of the follow-up stories to the Michigan kidnapping plot did look at the social media posts of some of the people who were arrested, and they clearly were Trump supporters and had anti-immigration sentiments. They were really resisted this idea restricting their movements because of COVID. They were misogynistic as well. They did not like the fact that a woman was running their state and had power. So if you examine their social media posts, you can get a better sense of where they were coming from as well.
One of the things I find interesting, and we'll never know the details on this angle, but the FBI, they were on the FBI radar, and they were followed to some extent, and surveillance, I'm sure, was at play here. And I'm just wondering how long this went on under the watchful eyes of federal law enforcement.
Right. According to the charging documents, they didn't really start doing this until May or June. And this was a fairly, even though they talked about earlier in the year when they issued the press release, what I saw said that this started, you know, it wasn't that old. And things really got rolling in July, August, and September. They went to a number of militia training exercises in different states in the Midwest. It was very active. Although, you know, there's people are talking about, don't call this a militia, call this domestic terrorism, and I think they have a real strong point. Not all militias are a domestic terrorist.
Judy Patrick is our guest today from the New York Press Association. It's Vox Pop, and we are doing a week in review. Let's go to James in Pittsfield. James, you're on.
Right. Just wanted to report another significant journalist death, that Don McGillis, former editor of the Eagle, reporter for the Boston Globe, father of Alec McGillis, a major writer for The New Yorker and so forth, died in a fall on Mount Katahdin day before yesterday, on Wednesday.
Hmm. Judy, did you know him?
No, I didn't, but I read those stories with great sadness. I mean, he was in his 70s, retired, and he had gone up Katahdin. He'd gone up Katahdin quite a few times. It's a major mountain up in Maine, and they had gotten lost by fog at night and were awaiting, rescue, but he'd fallen 50 feet and broke his leg. He'd been there lifted out, but he died. I did not know him, but his reputation is a strong one. It's very, 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 another very sad story. And, when there have been a lot of high profile deaths, in fact, I was listening to your news. I mean, Whitey Ford died.
Yeah.
We see the passing of, a generation of people who we've come to respect and admire over the years. And it's, you just have to keep on going and, pay tribute to them and then, life is not kind sometimes.
Well, you got that right. And no one ultimately wins the game. Our number is 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. I tell you what, Zach, the engineer, let's take a break. We'll get back to the phones on the other side of that break. If you want to email us as well, it's voxpop@wamc.org. Judy Patrick of the New York Press Association joins us. It's the Week in Review. And tell us what your top story is of the week. We'll be back. Fox Pop on WAMC, Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. We're joined on this Friday afternoon by Judy Patrick from the New York Press Association, and we're running down some of the big stories of the week in this Week in Review program. If you have one you want to share or you want to make a comment, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. We go to Barbara in Ballston Lake. Hello, Barbara.
Hi. I'm calling for two reasons, but the one is that I've had no power for 3.5 days. The area off of Exit 10 Northway is an absolute mess. You can't even go there. And I just, my one question was, has anybody heard when that area will get power? My other statement was that I was able, the only communication I have is this radio, battery radio, and I was able to hear the debate the other night, the vice president. Mm-hmm. And my comment is that I came kind of away from there and went for another jacket in my house, and I just didn't think either candidate didn't set the world on fire at all.
I guess that, you know, all things considered, that may not be the worst thing in the world, considering what's been going on. But I get your point, Barbara. And Judy, we talked about this last week. These vice presidential debates don't move the meter either way. This year may be a little different, though.
Right, because both of the main candidates, you know, Joe Biden and Donald Trump, are in their 70s, and there's concern about, you know, their how long they'll live, to be quite honest. Both Harris and Pence have a reputation for being good speakers, and the week before the presidential debate, it was so hard to get a cogent sentence that the vice presidential debate was a little bit of refreshing. Whether or not they were incredibly dynamic, I mean, Kamala Harris has a reputation for being dynamic. Pence has a reputation for being steady, and that can be a plodding when you're listening to it. But I do. You raise a really good point about the fact that you didn't have power, but you were still able to listen to the debates because of radio. So every once in a while we think, oh, radio's, you know, radio's old-fashioned. Yeah. We've got the web. We've got all these different things. But in a case like that, it's clear how important radio remains.
Why did I think of that the other night? Hey, Barbara, you know, did you get a different perspective when you were just listening to what they were saying as opposed to watching their mannerisms?
I heard about the fly when you came on, but obviously I couldn't see it. So that must have been hysterical.
I still haven't seen the fly.
I mean, I'm really afraid of the whole situation going on now. And I just don't, I'd love to know what we can do about it. And nobody seems to have an answer.
Well, you can vote.
And I understand why, but from the debate, myself, I just can't, first of all, they kept, I can't even think of her name. But anyway, she came away with stopping right on the point, and he never did.
You mean stopping when the time was up?
Yeah. And right. The moderator, and I thought the questions... I mean, I felt sorry for Chris Wallace and the other one.
Yeah.
What are you going to do about that? But I thought the questions were in blocks. And I don't know, to me, I guess you can't do it with our president, but to me, we should have like a debate. I mean, get out and say what you're for.
Yeah.
And they seem to be afraid to do that.
And I find that difficult to fathom, Judy, that you can't get a straight answer out of anybody during a debate. What's the point if they won't answer the questions?
Right. In fact, some reporters will tell you really can't get a straight answer out of almost any politician anytime. That's why they typically ask the same question 10 different ways. I have long argued that the better than a debate, I mean, it would be nice if they had a real debate with real debate rules. Like, I mean, people who really debate would be in charge. But it would almost be better if each candidate sat down one-on-one with someone like Chris Wallace or any legitimate journalist, and for 90 minutes talk about where they stand on the issues, and rather than this back and forth, where I don't think people really get a sense of why they stand for what they stand for and what they hope to accomplish.
By the way, Barbara, I just checked the NatGrid website, and they're saying this should be resolved by tomorrow at 9.
I'm sorry, Barbara.
Another freezing night, I guess.
You know, bundle up, but you never know. I think they give you the worst case scenario, and then you could be pleasantly surprised. So maybe it'll come back tonight.
You'd be surprised if you were anywhere near Usher Road. The back of my house is on it.
Oh.
That, how bad it is. I mean, you know, they've called in other crews. That much I know.
Well, Barbara, thank you very much.
Getting back to the commentator, I love her idea of doing as you suggested.
In the format that Judy suggests. Hey, Barbara, stay warm. Thank you very much for calling. 800-348-2551 is our number. 1-800-348-2551. Judy Patrick is here from the New York Press Association, and we're highlighting some of the big stories of the week. And let's go to John in Pittsfield. John.
Yes, you ready to hear me? Am I on?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, this has to do with the whole steroid thing and the president's bizarre behavior. No one seems to have mentioned the fact that when you are stopping to take steroids, you have to go down slowly, and the reason being you go through, as high as you were on it, you go through a severe depression. Now, I'm not a doctor, but I was prescribed that for an inflammatory illness I had, 5-10 years ago. And, you get depressed, you know, just like you get a buzz, you know, running around thinking you have plenty of energy.
Yeah.
You know, falsely. But when you come down, you have to come down very slowly. And also, yes, it causes a depression.
Well, you mentioned that you're not a doctor. I'm not a doctor. I've never taken steroids. I mean, John, you've taken them. Do you get this feeling right away? I mean, he was clearly not on them very long.
Yeah. Well, what happens is you get a lot of energy while you're taking them. I guess that's what causes the steroid rage. And, you know, the doctor told me you have to follow the instructions and taper down slowly because it can cause a severe depression. You can't stop immediately, in other words.
Interesting.
So,
Judy Patrick, you want to comment on that?
Well, right. And in fact, there's been a lot of criticism of especially cable news commentators commenting on what might be happening with the president's health. Part of the problem is the fact that we don't have enough information. We don't know really all the things that he's taking, all of the information that we need to know.
They listed all the things he's taking.
They listed things he's taking, but is it all the things he's taking? They didn't tell us whether or not does he have pneumonia? I think that it's been selective what we've heard about what he may or may not be taking. I think basically there's not a lot of confidence that we're getting the full picture, and it would be easier for us to understand what's happening. Maybe he's off the steroids by now. I don't know. Maybe he's off the Regeneron by now. I don't know. There's a lot we don't know about
that. Off the steroids, because you have to, like I say, taper off slowly, and he wouldn't have had enough time. Like I said, I'm not a doctor.
Okay.
You want to check up on that, though.
All right.
I'm almost positive that that is, the case.
All right, John. Well, thanks a lot for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop, and it is a Week in Review program with Judy Patrick, who was here last week as well on a Friday afternoon. And let's go to another Ray. Ray in Ulster, how you doing?
Hey, how you doing, guys? I really appreciate your show.
Thanks.
I miss the cooking show. I always liked the barbecue.
It's coming back, man. We'll do it. After everything settles down after the election, and hopefully we'll be able to bring some chefs in and stuff. It's kind of tough to do it over the phone, but that show is only on hiatus. It will come back. In the meantime, kind of digging this. Go ahead with your comment.
Well, my comment is this, your topic today is like what's going on, the latest. And you know what? Here's what my evaluation. My evaluation is, with all the corruption going on, with the voting suppression, what they're doing to the post offices, trying to make it so difficult for people to vote, that if Donald Trump wins the election, let's say he wins, he's going to be removed from office so fast, he's not going to be serving another four more years of office. And that's the good news. Okay. I just thought I'd make somebody laugh today.
All right, Ray, thanks for the call. Judy, you want to comment?
Well, I would like to tell you that I did make a batch of pumpkin muffins today, and I forgot the sugar, so I am no person for the cooking show.
You know what?
I forgot the sugar. They're
Judy,
kind of bland.
It's the thought that counts, and we appreciate that. Let's go to Victor in Salisbury, Connecticut. Victor.
Yeah, hi. I wanted to comment about the use of the statistics when everyone talks about the coronavirus.
Yeah.
Referencing the debate on Wednesday night, everyone talks in absolute numbers, but it's very misleading, and it's really not fair. You have to present the fatality statistics as a percentage of the population because it's a relative measure, not an absolute. You have to put it into context. And if you look at the statistics, look at the Johns Hopkins website, the number of deaths per 100,000 of population, the U.S. is ranked number 11th in the world. We are better at 64 deaths per 100,000 of population than Spain and Belgium, and at the same level as the U.K. And if you look further in the statistics, the number of fatalities per confirmed case, we are at 2.8%. which is really a measure of our effectiveness in dealing with this epidemic. We have one of the lowest rates in the world. We're better than the UK, Italy, France, Sweden, and Germany, which everyone recognizes has done a good job, but the US has done a very good job in managing the outbreak and containing the virus. So I deal in statistics, so I just wanted to get that point in, because everyone talks in gross numbers, but you really have to put these numbers into context and look how we're doing it, relatively speaking, with the rest of the world.
Well, I think you make an excellent point. I can't vet your numbers, Victor, but they sound plausible to me. But I think you make a great point, especially about things like debates, Judy Patrick. We'll often get broad generalities. And does that really help the national discourse?
Right. In fact, any debate can use statistics to prove any point you want. It's just like almost like Bible passages. You can find any Bible passages to support any point out there. The idea that our death rate is going down when it comes to COVID is because the way we're treating it has advanced considerably. Our doctors have learned a lot in the last 6 months about how to treat, and we have some of the best medical care in the world. We should. I mean, we're. But again, I think our infection rate, being 11th, is nothing. I think there are lower infection rates in Vietnam than there are here, per when you look at the statistics, the last I looked. I mean, there are certainly countries that are poorer off that are doing better with this than we are. But again, I applaud the fact that we have brought that death rate down. Nonetheless, the fact that almost 1,000 people died yesterday is nothing to overlook. And I think one of the things I like to do is look at the obituaries of the people who died and realize that those people, if we had taken stronger measures earlier, those people might not necessarily be dead today.
Victor, thanks for an interesting call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. If you would like to talk to Judy Patrick, and as we do our Week in Review program, you know, it didn't make your list, Judy Patrick, of top five stories, but this whole business about next week's debate, is it on? Is it off? Is it live? Is it virtual? And then combining that with, is President Trump still contagious with COVID-19?
Right. I'm betting that there will be no debate next week. I think Biden's already booked some time with George Stephanopoulos on ABC for a town hall. The president, no way, is going to do virtual because he doesn't want to get cut off.
But, he said as much, by the way. He said exactly
he said
that.
Yeah. He does not want that microphone cut off. And, like, who does? That has been a crazy scenario going back and forth. The thing is that a debate gives him 74 million viewers at least, you know, millions and millions and millions. He can go on Rush Limbaugh or on Hannity, but he's preaching to the choir. He needs to get his message out to people who aren't going to vote for him already, to the undecided voters or to voters who support Biden who may want to vote for him. He's not going to find them on the Fox News Network or on the Rush Limbaugh program.
Well, on the flip side of that, if Biden talks to George Stephanopoulos, he's preaching to his choir as well, right?
Yeah, right. But any network program has far more viewers than a radio the Limbaugh radio program. But again, you can't dismiss Fox, which is the most watched cable news network in the country at this point.
Well, I don't know whether it will happen or not, but the way things sort of change, you know, the stimulus package is on and then it's off and then it's on again. The debate could be back on by tonight. You never know.
Yeah, right. They could have it tomorrow morning. Who knows? I mean, the news cycle is so unpredictable at this point. I encourage people to try to get off the news. I try to limit my news consumption to, you know, certain hours of the day, but it is hard to walk away from.
You care to make any predictions for next week, Judy Patrick?
Well, next week, I do not. I mean, I'm scared. Every week, it's a little scary. And, you know, we had the Nobel Peace Prize awarded today, not to the people at the UN who provide food to people, to those who are hungry,
yeah.
who have been displaced because of this pandemic. So most of the Nobel Prizes got, you know, were awarded. That was all a whole bunch of good news. The MacArthur Genius Grants got awarded this week. That was a bunch of good news, but that always gets overwhelmed by this incredibly crazy political cycle.
But I mean, isn't that all? You're a very veteran newspaper person. That's normal, right?
It is.
No one really wants to read the feel-good stories for very long.
It's true, and this week's media project, which airs Sunday on WAMC, we talk about what's going to happen. What will happen if President Trump gets defeated? Will the news cycle collapse because we'll run out of things to talk about? There will always be things to talk about. It's always surprising. You think every story in the world has already happened, but there will always be stories.
Has the news, and I will just kill a minute here before we wrap up here, and I'll ask you this. I'm sure you have discussed this on the Media Project. Has the news media, as is alleged by those on the far left and the far right, has the news media been an accomplice in dividing the nation?
Yeah, and so especially cable, certainly, especially cable news stations. We talk a lot about Fox News and MSNBC and CNN. I think the mainstream news media, you know, you get your regular networks do a fairly good job of trying to be even-handed. But we talk a lot about the fact that sometimes the news media bends over too far backward to try to be fair, and we call it false equivalence. That I talked about it early on when I talked about this is not normal for President Trump to be doing these things. This is not normal, and we need to call it out. As it's more than not normal. It's erratic, and so in some respects, this presidency has challenged us to really examine what we do, but to rethink about all the news we consume. I encourage people to watch Fox, to watch MSNBC, to watch the network news, to read newspapers, to read their local newspapers, because you need to get a variety of opinions, and to listen to WAMC.
Well, that's a very good way to end the program. Judy Patrick, good luck with the pumpkin cookies. Are they muffins?
Muffins. I'm sending them to you because I'm not eating them.
Well, they're that terrible. All right. Well,
there's no sugar in them.
Oh, you know, on second thought, why don't you just hang on to those and we'll send them to Shartok. He doesn't eat sugar. Hey, thank you so much for being here, Judy.
You're welcome.
Have a great weekend, and I'm sure some crazy stuff will happen. We'll talk to you soon. 800-348-2551. I gave you the number. The show is over. Zach is looking at me funny. That's right. Support comes from Big Y, family-owned and operated market with locations throughout the Berkshires, celebrating more than 80 years of serving communities throughout New England. BigY.com. Henry's at the Farm Restaurant at Buttermilk Falls, Milton, offering reservation-only Hudson Valley dining on Buttermilk's tented patio, preparing fall picnics and takeout as well. ButtermilkFallsIn.com/Henry's. At Enchanting Escapes, independent woman-owned travel advisory company working to help people design travel experiences, specializing in immersive, experiential adventures on land, sea, and rivers. EnchantingEscapes.net. Once again, thanks to Judy Patrick for being here. Thank you for listening. Thanks for the calls and the emails. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Jordan Yuxall answered the phones today. Now, the weekend is upon us. I will take a couple of days and sit in the dark with my family, and maybe the power will come on. But other than that, we'll just catch a squirrel and eat it on the grill. On Monday, 2 p.m., join us then. We will join Dr. Eric Yeager and talk about coronavirus. That's 2 o'clock on Monday. Have a splendid weekend. Stand by now for the best of our knowledge.